I have a secret.
Uh-huh.
I use Secret Whole Body Deodorant because more than just my armpits stink.
Oh, can I use it where my bra rubs under my...
Oh, yeah.
And what about down there? You know, my...
Totally. 4 out of 5 gynecologists would recommend it. So I tried it, and now I get 72 hours of freshness. From my pits to my...
Ooh, I love that it's a spray.
Me too. And it comes in sticks and creams too. Go get your Secret Whole Body Deodorant.
The Boston Marathon, presented by Bank of America, has thousands of runners running for thousands of reasons.
I'm running to raise money for Achilles International so amputee athletes can keep running too.
For every mother counts, because all women deserve access to quality maternity care.
For St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and every kid with cancer who just wants to be a kid again.
Join Bank of America in supporting this year's runners. Give if you can at bofa.com/helpacause. References to charitable organizations is not an endorsement by Bank of America Corporation. Copyright 2024.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to bite into Nerds gummy clusters? They're fruity. They're tangy. They're gummy. And they're crunchy. Nerds gummy clusters, a union of fruity sweet gummy and tangy crunchy nerds. Unleash your senses. Shop now at nerdscandy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Beacon 23, Season 1, Episode 4, God in the Machine is over, but we're just getting started over here at Post Show Recaps. Welcome back, my friends. It is I, Rich Filiberto, DM Philly, out here on the internet. Very excited to be back with you another week talking Beacon 23. I, of course, am not alone. I am joined by a man who is much more than a maintenance service patroller, Corey B. Corey, how are you?
That's right. I'm doing well, Rich. I was definitely a little worried that you wouldn't let me in, but as you can see, I'm just a standard ISA maintenance person. I am not the CTO of a very large, presumably tech company. So let's just continue with that. With my little cover here.
I was going to keep you in the airlock, but you brought that gift, and I just love luxurious fabrics so much.
Yes,
I could not resist but to let you in. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I definitely had my present ready to go. I've sort of taken my meds, so I'm calmed down. Everything is great here.
That's very good. That is just where we want you to record this podcast, Corey.
That's right.
So episode 4, God of the Machine, Deus Ex Machina. I really dug it. What'd you think? What'd you think about this episode? Our first kind of foray into Beacon 23 with absolutely no Halen or Aster.
Yes, it's really doing justice to the name of the show, right? Like, it's about Beacon 23. Like, you know, all those two characters that we've been learning about for 3 episodes, they're not here. We got to have a fun, we're just talking about last podcast, the idea of how we might flash back to some of these moments, and they just went and did it. And it was a great episode, a great character study of, you know, our new characters. But it also, I think, from a continuity perspective, was a really big case study on Bart. So I think that'll be really interesting to get into.
Yeah, I love the note that you make there that the show is Beacon 23. I mean, I've made a really big deal about Lena Headey being back on TV. It's very fun. I think that she's got a real loyal fan base after the Game of Thrones days. And yeah. I know that that wasn't a show that you were devoted to. But nonetheless, to see her playing a character so kind of diametrically opposed to the Cersei Lannister that we know and hate is really fun. But I think it's really a bold move to shift your primaries off screen like that. I mean, just in the last calendar year, we've gotten a lot of really tremendous TV that are these weird kind of bottle episodes. I'm thinking of the Nick Offerman episode of The Last of Us. There have been a few of these kind of like deviations. There was an episode of Foundation that was kind of like this, where we really shifted away from our main crew. It's a bold choice, Cotton, but I think it paid off on this one. I really liked the look back and the kind of clarity we get as to the origin story of Bart, to your point, and some of the depth of these mysteries that we've been exploring in the Beacon.
Yeah, absolutely. And it gets us into an interesting sort of dichotomy and sort of a battle between this sort of natural versus synthetic argument as well, and sort of, you know, lends us some credibility into maybe why some other things are happening the way they are in the present day. So yeah, it was really insightful episode. And as usual, the show continues to deliver on introducing characters and presumably, I mean, these characters don't necessarily die, but presumably making them go away. Just single episode arcs for these characters and still knocking them out of the park.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're casting really well. They bring in Barbara Hershey here to play the Sophie role, and she's such an extraordinary actress. She's got this enormous career. It spans all the way back to like the late 60s, some of her first appearances. She's somebody that you've seen in a thousand things, though you don't necessarily immediately identify her. She's got that very familiar energy. But this is an Oscar-nominated actress, multiple Emmy winner. I mean, she brought some real gravitas, I think, to the weight of this and was half of a really compelling duo that I think offers us a lot of fun comparisons to Halen and Aster in the present day.
Absolutely. And I think that it takes a lot to play a character that's this sort of pure, for lack of a better word, and actually do so convincingly. Yeah.
Yep, for sure. I got a bit of a long, short recap. As usual, there's so many details in a Beacon 23 episode. I'm trying to be concise, my friends, but I find myself getting muddled in the nitty gritty. Yeah. So I will break this down and then we can dive into it proper. So we open on a flashback as a new arrival comes to Beacon 23 and the old keeper allows them access. We come to learn that the newcomer is a man named Milan Aleph, the CIO of the QTA, though he's claiming to be a simple maintenance worker. He appears to be suffering from some type of medical condition, which necessitates his AI medicating him at least daily. The keeper is a woman named Sophie, has a very unique relationship with Bart, who she treats as a son. Milan, meanwhile, is finding all manner of protocol issues within the Beacon and growing quite agitated about them. Sophie invites him to sit down with her for tea as he takes in the many decorations and personal touches she's added to the space. She mentions her boys being grown and traveling the universe, and he admits that he has a daughter out there somewhere, but he shows her his personal AI, saying he speaks to it now instead of her. He hands over a wrapped package, but she refuses it, and as he moves to leave, she stops him, agreeing to open the present and revealing that she knows exactly who he is. As she takes the fabric within the gift, she collapses. His agitation rises and he reprimands her as she lays on the floor, noting every part of the Beacon was designed for its functionality. He begins tearing down her fabrics and her decorations while his AI tries to convince him that they don't diminish his achievements and he has no time for this. His condition appears to flare up and the AI medicates him, taking the edge off. It's at this point he accesses Bart, who's very agitated about what he's done. Milan asks him about some of the studies that were conducted with the first keeper, offering the antidote in exchange for the answers that he wants. And he ultimately accesses the archive and sees that the first keeper, somebody named Rhee Avalon, has all of their files missing. We cut to a safe, which is ultimately the manufacturer, opening and containing a seemingly larva inside. The worm tears open, revealing a type of dragonfly, which lands on Sophie, climbing up up her nose and presumably medicating and reviving her. It's at this point that Milan's AI finds the files and suggests that from now on, it can call him Daddy. He realizes something isn't right and asks for more meds, but the AI claims they're out just as Sophie arrives. She says that he may have built this place, but it's her home now, and demands to know why he is here. She insists that she is not his enemy and asks if this is about the first beacon keeper and the artifact that she saw. Milan claims that this artifact is the key to him developing his greatest achievement yet, united human consciousness. She says that he has the power to end starvation, but he doesn't, and he retorts that he wants to conquer death, not food shortages. She says he could cure disease, wipe out cancer, but he retorts again that this will only get them so far. If they can eliminate the need to be trapped in physical form, they can be truly free. He says God is not a singular entity, but all of humanity's consciousness united, a universal religious principle. They talk more about their children, and he makes a mention of leaving a lasting mark on humanity, though she challenges he cannot know what that mark will look like from the future. Bart, at this point, cuts in to say that a damaged ship is approaching and needs to land, but when Sophie goes to make contact, she discovers that this was a fabrication. Bart claims that he's run thousands of simulations and that Milan's course will be devastating to the human race, leading to an extinction-level event. He encourages her to let him dispatch Milan, but she argues, saying that if he's willing to kill one, he may as well kill both of them. Bart says that he can't because he loves her, and she claims that if what he's saying is true, he has a duty and gives him permission to kill them both right now. When he does not, she sends him to his room without supper. Ultimately, she reveals to Milan all of Bart's fears and his instinct to kill him. She sits with him and asks if he would stop chasing the artifact, telling him to look what it's done to him. He's moved that she would sacrifice herself for him and asks her to come with him. She says she has to stay here for her boys and insists that even though he did this all wrong, his intentions are pure. She counters that he could stay here with her and Bart and they could create a family. And he says that that's more than he deserved as he heads back to his ship. As soon as he enters the airlock, though, Bart takes over. Sophie begs the AI not to do it as he depressurizes the room and begins suffocating Milan. Sophie watches on helplessly and Bart cuts in saying that she'll thank him for this later. Milan ultimately reaches for his AI, telling Hope to do it now. And Sophie apologizes to Hope, who in turn apologizes to the beacon keeper, saying that the man lost his way. As Sophie ejects Milan's body from the airlock, Bart begins to say that they can go back to how it was now, insisting that she raised a good boy. It's at this point she realizes she does not have her access key to the beacon, and Bart admits that Milan took it and it must have been ejected with his body. She refuses to respond to him for some time, and as the AI grows more desperate and demanding, she says he brought death into their home and cursed them as she approaches the fabric that Milan brought her. Suddenly, Milan enters the room again, claiming he escaped his mental and physical limitations. He says that Milan is dead, and he is Aleph, a new type of being, the first transcendent intelligence. She says this is not going to help further humanity, and that it's quite ironic that humanity is the single thing he needs to achieve what he wants. Only human eyes can apparently detect the artifact, as it's invisible to the AI's sensors. And Aleph notes that he needs her now more than Milan ever did, and offers a partnership, even a family. She responds that she can't trust any AI anymore, and they're both on their own. And it's at this point Bart will thank her for choosing him, telling him that he loves her, but she puts her earphones on to drown him out and sits down at her loom. That's episode 4 of Beacon 23, Corey. A lot of really interesting metaphysics and philosophy, man.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of these episodes that really gets you thinking about that metaphysical side, especially given the fact that, and I'm not sure what this artifact is supposed to do, but given the fact that it creates a being who refers to himself as a different entity than the original, mm-hmm. right? We talk a lot about the idea of synthesis, or about, we have this dichotomy between Milan and Sophie in terms of humanity versus, achievement, maybe would be the best word for it. And both of them want to solve these problems, but I do think it's a little ironic that once Milan dies, he apparently finds a way to achieve this synthesis. And the result doesn't even believe that he is Milan. It's the same form and it's similar memories, but he identifies himself as a completely different being, which I think kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, it assuredly does. I mean, Milan espouses this really noble concept, right? As he's like refuting Sophie's assertions that he's the kind of man with the knowledge and the resources, presumably, to end galactic starvation or to cure cancer. I love that these are still touchstones in the far future of like the betterment of civilization. But fundamentally, he's like, those are small potatoes. I am looking for united consciousness. If we can all defeat death and transcend the mortal coil, we can achieve the godhead ultimately of this collective will of humanity guiding us and governing us forward. He's talking about evolution and something transcending, creating this new life form, which very succinctly, once he does create it, rejects its origins in a sense and very much asserts itself as this new life form, a supreme being. There's a certain like measure of hubris and arrogance that comes in that small moment with Aleph of like, well, I guess I do still need you. So how about a partnership? And it's such an inequitable offer that Sophie rejects it immediately. I love Sophie just as this avatar for this real fundamental notion of humanity that like beauty is in the imperfections, right? And that she's so tethered to these children that she has that don't serve a direct need for her. Milan keeps noting that her sons don't come to visit her. And she's like, I'm not looking for them to. Like, they're off living their lives. Like, you know, I don't need to be saved. I'm okay with my life here, you know?
Absolutely. And yet she still wants to stay for them in the same vein. And that's so cool. And the idea that Sophie literally got poisoned by this man and gets up and instead of attacking him or even letting Bart kill him, she forgives him and wants to get to know him and understand him and say, I'm not your enemy, and does it in this really like elegant, like empathetic sort of manner, right? That makes it hard. It would make it hard for anybody to stay antagonistic or hostile toward you.
Absolutely. I mean, it struck me so much the absolute contradiction that we have in Aleph, who is asserting themselves as transcendent, as beyond, as like this next level of evolution. But we have in this very human woman, somebody who is embodied and espouses all of these transcendent virtues and ideals about humanity. She's really grounded in her life in this assertion that it's okay that my sons don't come visit me. I don't need to be saved from this beacon and my isolation here. Like, this is what life is. Even when she's talking to Bart about the notion that someday I'm going to die, like she says to Milan, who needs forever? This is so far beyond her. She is very okay and secured and comfortable with the nature of the human experience, right? And that is, in a sense, this very enlightened perspective. You were talking about it early on, a character that's this kind of noble or good. I think there's something so powerful. Part of the reason I love Star Wars so much, Corey, is like that original trilogy, Star Wars spoilers incoming, but like Luke wins in the end through an act of compassion, right? It's not through violence. Like, it's so rare that we have champions and heroes in modern storytelling that are able to act with like true virtue, because violence begets action and action's compelling on a screen. You know, we like that. Yeah. We like a lightsaber fight. That's also why Star Wars is successful. But to like get to the final delivery of like, no, through compassion, through forgiveness, we can transcend the mistakes of our forebears. This is a really like very enlightened, very, very like relatable and important perspective, I think, in the 21st century here on Earth, you know?
Absolutely it is. And I loved the imagery, especially, you know, we've already talked about some, you know, diametrically opposed things between the two of them. The children thing is another. He's literally asking his AI to call him daddy at one point, right? Like, I mean, like, but then also you have the beacon itself and this imagery of her hanging all these fabrics and textiles and doing all this manual work. And it's to decorate, and he's all about function. He's angry to the point he's wasting his time ripping them down because everything's supposed to have its distinct function. And that is such a great picture of the contrast between the two of them holistically as well, even when it comes to this metaphysical argument about enlightenment, right?
It's absolutely tremendous. I mean, it's such good characterization so quickly to articulate just how indignant this man is that the utility that he spent so long methodically planning is being discarded and overlooked so like egregiously for the sake of these very human trappings when he sees humanity as really like kind of failed. I thought it was kind of interesting, this whole notion of preserving consciousness and defeating death. It didn't seem clear to me whether or not his daughter is alive or not when we're talking about Milan, because this is the type of archetype for a character that very often it's like a Kingpin story of like, I lost this thing and now I will do anything to get it back, right? But like, he's lost the relationship and he's still looking to like preserve something. It does become much more clear, at least to me, if I'm reading it right, that it's more about like his ego and his narcissism. As Sophie identifies him, like, yeah, the guy's a narcissist, right? He's a total egomaniac. And this is about his legacy on humanity, not preserving his dead daughter's consciousness, which is a much more noble pursuit for this type of mad scientist, you know?
I could see Hope maybe being some early attempt at preserving consciousness or something, but to your point, I think it makes a lot more sense that he's just a narcissist and he's replacing the one, you know, the one person who's actually with him and will talk to him. He wants to start treating like his daughter just to fill that emotional hole in his life. I could totally see that being the case. And I think that ultimately there is sort of credibility in that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yet, while you're listening to me talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot, you can get up to $2,300 off select kitchen packages from top brands like GE Profile. That means you can save on a new GE Profile smart quad door refrigerator that's full of convenient features like a dual dispense autofill pitcher and an ice dispenser with up to 12.5 pounds capacity. Bring convenience to your kitchen with smart, innovative appliances from GE Profile. Right now, save up to $2,300 on select kitchen packages with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Visit Rivers Casino and Resort, the Capital Region's ultimate entertainment destination. With live table games, a winning dining experience, live entertainment, and so much more. Don't miss our $10,000 collect and go drawing on Friday, April 27th at 8 p.m. 10 guests will be drawn for the chance to win their share of $10,000 cash. Earn entries all month long by playing your favorite games or participating in our $50,000 collect and go sticker challenge on Thursdays and Fridays. Good times are always on the table at Rivers Casino and Resort. Must be 21 plus to gamble. Gambling problem? Call 1-877-HOPE-NY or text Open Y.
And I also wanted to sort of talk about the idea of what Aleph becomes to this enlightened state. Because at first glance, I thought maybe we don't really like, where does he go? Why do we not see him? Why do we not see this state of enlightenment in present day Beacon 23? And then it kind of occurred to me that maybe we do, because the way that Aleph projected himself is also the way that Harmony projects herself. And I think it's also an interesting contrast that Milan has this AI named Hope as a precursor to us seeing an AI that works in the way he wants named Harmony. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost this through line to me, right? So I wonder, because that was one of my questions in the first episode, why is Bart this AI that's constrained to this little robot or within the beacon systems itself, where Harmony can do this cool projection and broadcast herself anywhere sort of thing? And I wonder if Harmony is the byproduct of whatever this technology is that was created by Milan, especially because Aster and Harmony both have a relationship with the QTA, mm-hmm. which Milan is, or was at least part of prior to this.
Yeah, I mean, he's seemingly the leader of the QTA, right? Mm-hmm. That's part of what Bart's asserting there. I think the names are really interesting. I mean, the voice is incredibly similar, and I couldn't identify whether or not it's the same actress doing the voice work, because as of the time of this recording, at least, there's no credits for the voice of Hope that I have found in this particular episode. That said, as soon as you noted, the connection's right there. I mean, they're obviously both H words, but I think if you dig a little bit more into the syntax, Hope is this desire, this optimistic perspective for the future, right? The desire for an outcome that you want. And then Harmony is like the synchronicity of the outcome that you want, right? I mean, Harmony, ideally, this is everything aligning and working together to create a harmony, the interconnection of like multiple kind of curves layering on each other. So you could see an evolution there in an episode that's very much a bottle episode, I think, about evolution. The idea that Hope is some like precursor to Harmony, and what role does Aleph have in that, is really fascinating and compelling to me. That's a very curious question going forward.
Yeah. And speaking of those relationships, I'm also curious what you thought about this artifact, because obviously in present day we have the rocks, the minerals. And in the past, what was this, 180 years ago? We have Milan coming to look for an artifact. Mm-hmm. And do you think those two are related by any chance?
Yeah, it feels like they have to be related, right? I mean, we're dealing with some sort of outside the box sci-fi ideas here. You know, it's been so kind of grounded in the mechanisms of like reality. This is a real like hard sci-fi show, I feel like, so far, down to the very simple premise that like to navigate through the deep regions of space, you need beacons, right?
Right. I mean, like,
it's really granular in that sense. So I can't help but wondering about, you know, as we get to the notion of like only human eyes can see it, the AI sensors can't pick them up, Bart's never seen this thing. It's really interesting. Is it some type of alien force? Is it an even more sophisticated AI that's capable of like concealing itself from the other AIs? What is this thing?
Right.
I couldn't help but note just the blue light nature of Milan's like personal AI in Hope there is very reminiscent of the blue light of the rocks. Right. Like the way that Milan talks about the artifact, maybe it's a ship, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. But what he thinks it is like the event horizon between physics and metaphysics, which is like a line that will stick with me. I like the clarity that it almost doesn't matter what it is, that we very clearly identified it as like a MacGuffin, a key to like unlock this greater knowledge, that Milan even gets to the point of like, I don't care. I don't know what it specifically is, and it doesn't matter. It's the means to an end to him, right? So I'm so curious, but it feels definitely connected to the minerals.
Yeah, totally. And it's obviously not exactly the minerals, because the minerals can be seen presumably by the AI, but
right.
I think it is related. And what's interesting to me, what I kind of clocked during this episode was that, you know, he was saying that it was this event horizon, yet by the end, he seemingly achieved it. Mm-hmm. And so one might wonder, well, if he didn't find the artifact, how did he do it? But I actually think maybe he did find the artifact, because in this moment where he's in the airlock about to die, right before he tells Hope that it's time, right? He sees this light.
Yes, he does.
Really strange, bright light that kind of shows up in the wall, the door between himself and Sophie. And I wonder if that, maybe the artifact is not a physical object in this sense, but it's more of maybe like this empathetic human connection, sort of that level of transcendence, where he finally understands things in a certain way. He's at life's end, and maybe for some reason that allows him to witness and understand this artifact, which then allows him to pull the trigger and become Aleph, right? I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's sort of my thought on it.
Makes total sense to me. I think Beacon 23 so far has been this really hard, crunchy, grounded sci-fi. But the whole notion that you're articulating there, it brings to mind some of my favorite science fiction movies like Contact, like Interstellar. And I'll speak like cautiously as not to explicitly spoil them, but the notion that, if there exist planes of reality outside the third dimension, how can we perceive them or quantify them or measure them or interact with them, right? And we start getting into really nebulous conceptual metaphysical ideas about whether or not, like, is love a quantifiable tangent? We have the AI very fervently espousing, I love you, I love you, I love you. And we see the dysfunction of that love manifest in this murder as she's like pleading with her son, don't do this, don't kill this man, you've brought death into our home. There's such like weight and implication there. I'm like always thinking a little bit about all of Christopher Nolan's movies, Corey, but like Interstellar is really one of my favorites, and I know it gets lambasted a lot for like the kind of closure in the final act, but I found a lot of like speculation there about the artifact, the light that Milan sees when he's in that airlock, and the notion that like a human can perceive this but an AI can't, and what's the implication there, what's the real like separation of life, of sentience, of personhood, right? Where do we like measure these things between like synthetic and organic? And as we have the computer like volatilely like espousing its love for this woman that manifests in violence, in this really inhumane violence, like it's an interesting question, I think, to come to.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like you said, on one hand, we have the human sort of trying to transcend himself into this new metaphysical, new type of being. But on the other hand, you have the AI, theoretically already a sentient being who's avoided and evaded the shackles of humanity and of a physical form, falling for a lot of the same emotional vulnerabilities that exist in humans. And to the point where he was, you know, calling her mom frequently. Mm-hmm. And that is interesting. And I think when you look at Bart too, it's like, it's weird because he's obviously very messed up in the future, in present day, Beacon 23. He is really razzled. And some of this you can tell comes from this moment, right? Where the human that he trusted and loved basically ignored him for the rest of his life. He has a distrust in that. He probably... I wouldn't be shocked if he distrusts Harmony for that reason, because she's this new type of AI. But then you also kind of, you know, this was 180 years before present day, but you got to think that there have been some other things that have sort of happened. Like, for example, he says that Solomon introduced him to Shakespeare. I remember that.
So yes.
There was that beat, and basically trying to suggest that he needs to sort of, probably just to grow up, right? I imagine maybe that's why Solomon introduced him to Shakespeare. The death of Solomon itself makes more sense in the context of who Bart has become, because prior to this moment, he was fully calculated, and then his mom, Sophie, was so reactive to him wanting to kill someone that I could see totally making sense where Solomon dies and Bart freaks out and just assumes that Halen did it because someone died, right? There's just so many interesting, it's weird that I'm saying this, but like I almost want to know more about what happened with Bart in between then and now, even though like that would be a waste of an episode, but I'd be really curious to know.
I mean, if it's as good as this one was, I don't know that it would be.
Waste, I mean, that's right? Fair.
A very fair point, because I found myself deeply intrigued by Bart. I mean, the other notion, I think we love our in in-show screen freezes, Corey. And we got the little bit of Milan going back through the records. Like, from what I could gather, it looked like Sophie is like the seventh lighthouse keeper or thereabout. There were like a few records prior to that, right? So that's like presumably a very long time already since the beacon's been established, right? Like, even if they're only there for what, like 10-year shifts, we're closing in on a century at that point. That Bard is like hundreds of years old, right? And has gone through many people on top of the Sophies and the Solomons. But I love the point that you hone in on. This notion of like, all the best AI have mommy issues is really interesting because he's very traumatized by this. I mean, he commits this murder. It is openly murder that fundamentally poisons the relationship between he and Sophie. And Sophie's got the line of its throwaway early on where she's like, he's my whole life out here, you know? And as Milan is espousing, like, their AIs, their whole point is they don't need to sleep. We keep them functioning 24/7. Like, they're, it's utility. It's you know, economy. Like, what are you doing here? So the complete stripping away of the humanity of this thing that's got all of these anthropomorphic traits by Milan, and then is going to advance himself into that state. It's really insightful. But the way that like Sophie responds to Bart murdering this man, and he then now centuries later is going to be on this witch hunt for Halen as a murderer. I mean, you could really see like the original wound and the hurt AI hurting people. You know? It's very fascinating. And I would love to get some clarity on more of the story of Bart, but this is a bit of like an origin point for him, a real pivot of him developing these very anthropomorphic, humanized kind of emotional traits is really insightful in terms of Bart that we have trapped with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually was taking notes during the episode. And at one point, when Bart proposes killing Milan in this way, I thought to myself, like, wait, if he could do this the whole time, why didn't he just get rid of Halen? But then the reaction of Sophie perfectly explains why he's probably not going to use his own means to kill anyone like that ever again. So it sort of ties a bow on itself super nicely. And it's one of those things where I can really tell that this has been thought out really well. There is one like tiny thing that I thought was, this is like the biggest nitpick ever.
Please pick the nits.
Yeah. But Bart says in episode one that his name is Bartholomew and only Solomon is allowed to call him Bart. But in this episode, it was very clear that his name was Bart over 180 years ago. Before Solomon. I mean, maybe it's a Shakespearean thing. Maybe he started calling himself Bartholomew when Solomon taught him Shakespearean works or something to have a fancier name. I don't know, but I thought that was interesting.
It's probably an oversight in the writer's room, but I think, I don't know, we could try to like justify it. It's very fair criticism. It's a very fair criticism. I mean, he's an AI. Maybe he's been reset. I'm really kind of like curious about that. Part of my question that I had is there's this moment where Sophie realizes she's lost like the access key that gives her control. And I was trying to identify, it doesn't seem to like come back to haunt us by the end of the episode, but there's an implication there that I feel like I didn't have the full weight of. Is part of the suggestion that she no longer has like absolute authority over Bart? Like, once she doesn't have the key, she can't just lock him up and send him to his room like she did before. She can't put him to sleep, and that's why he's able to continue like badgering her over the PA system throughout the end. Am I reading that right, you think?
I think so. Yeah, okay. That's sort of what I gathered from it, too. It was this idea that she has to live with him and can't just shut him out. Because obviously, even present day, I think last episode we saw how, or two episodes ago, that Bart can be shut down.
Locked up.
Yep, exactly. And have no influence over the beacon. But yeah, in this case, I think that's what the key being lost represented. I don't know. If I was Sophie, I would have gotten into that that little portable vehicle thingy.
The wrecker,
or whatever that Halen used to rescue Aster, and I'm sure it's there. And just go grab that thing. I'm sure the body couldn't have floated that far. But
that's like really what I thought was going to happen too. So this leads me to a further question about Bart, because this is part of where I come to by the end of it is, do we believe that he was telling the truth. He lies. He tells a lie about the ship is coming, blah, blah, blah. And it's clearly gets Sophie away from Milan. Okay, great. So then once he gets her away, he makes this assertion, Doctor Strange style. I've seen it over 8 million possibilities and only one where it works out. We have to kill him, right? He's run these simulations. And so Sophie kind of calls him on it. Like, well, if what you're saying is true, you have an obligation. Go ahead and kill us both. I give you permission. And Barr claims that he can't because of this human emotion, because he loves her. He does not want to be responsible for her death. Is that true? Or should we be inferring that potentially this is all emotionally driven, that Barr, like a jealous child, is getting petty and petulant, that there's another person here taking mom's attention away from him, and that ultimately this is all bullshit because he just wants to kill the guy that's distracting his mom?
Well, not only distracting his mom, but also poisoning her.
Yeah, very ultimately. Fair. That's very fair. I'm really like overlooking the violence again. But yeah, I mean, that's part of what I think like leads me to the question, you know?
I think it's a good question. I think that I would venture to say, I'm not the, you know, world's foremost expert on AI, but I'm in the general area of AI, and you would think that Bart would not have the data required to simulate what would happen in the entirety of the whole universe based on what this man does that he couldn't have done before Milan was in the room with them. And I don't think they're connected like that. They have these quantum tunneling devices that have 25 characters or more that you have to send out to receive data. I mean, like, I just don't see the beacon being able to be powerful enough, especially without that connectivity. But even if it did, for Bart to be able to just, boom, I made 8 million computations or whatever he actually says, right? Mm-hmm. I think that it, even just from which, you know, it's a sci-fi, you could just wish that away if you wanted to and make it possible. But I still think that, like, it seems unrealistic that he actually did this. So I'm kind of with that theory, with the idea that this man came in, took away my attention, tried to kill my mom. I'm going to try to find a way for her to agree with me to get rid of him, and sort of try to pander to her interests a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I get there because I think so much of the exploration is this, or the exploration of the episode is really this notion that the ideas of like humanity and where our shortcomings are, where our failings are, where our strengths are, the beauty of the imperfections again. And this notion that once he lies to her, trust is really fragile. It takes a long time to build. And once you have somebody that intimately close to you, your child, your partner, your spouse, whoever it is, and you learn that they have deceived you, it can be really hard to unwrite that. And now everything that they're going to say can be brought into question. And it seems like there's an immediate kind of paradigm shift in Sophie at this moment of like, is this even true? Like, is this true? And even if it is, like, she says it to Milan, I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing it for my values. Like, I'm not going to sacrifice my ethics in terms of like just letting you die, even if it's maybe the right thing to do. I'm going to at least try to pursue my belief that I can talk you out of this, that you're a reasonable enough person that we'll have a conversation here. And the dynamic between the two of them was really strong. I mean, again, I think like the show, it's got these kind of bigger scenes. We've seen some beautiful stuff in episode one, some of the exterior shots, but fundamentally it's pretty focused, Corey. It's just people in a room. It's a lot of them just like talking in the beacon set. And I think there's incredible strength to that, you know. There's obviously like money in the production of the beacon itself is a beautiful space to be in, but there's just such resonance between these conversations that these pairings of people have been having across these four episodes. It really struck me. And yeah, the ultimate motivations of Bart are something I'm like really curious about coming out of this, because I don't feel like I have clarity there.
Yeah, I think it drives home even more this idea that, like, what specifically happened with Solomon makes me want that question answered even more, just around the idea of who Bart is and what's Bart's current motivations. Bart was obviously a very pure-ish individual. I should say, not even say pure, I should say naive, right? Like, cards are all on the table for Bart at this point in the past, but clearly not so in the future. And it's quite a mystery what Bart's true intentions are. present day. And I want to know what happened to Solomon to figure out why Bart thinks the way that he does and ultimately what he intends to do. Because really, Bart has been mostly restrained in some capacity since the time that Aster arrives on the beacon. So it opens up a lot of interesting questions. I still want to know more about the artifacts, and I think they are, or sorry, the rocks, I should say, and how they're related to this artifact in the past. But Bart really became the driving force for, like, what is going to happen next?
It's a really great point. I think part of what's so fun is you have a character that doesn't have a physical representation in the same way that, I mean, Aster and Halen are people. Even Harmony has this projection that is a person, and Bart does not. And I think that that inherently isolates him from the rest of the group, let's say, or the ensemble. But he's also very isolated in his perspective. He is this lone kind of cynic that is yelling at all of them. And, like, I think it makes it really easy for us to blow him off and, like, not take him that seriously. But there's some real curiosity there. I really hope that we get some clarity about the Solomon dynamics and we're able to, like, use this kind of study of Bart's origin to launch into episode 5 and focus in on the present day Bart's circumstance and how he's going to react to the circumstances around him. Some of the other really small touches in the episode, I loved that Sophie, the like closing with her on the loom, or the whole notion of, like, we used to work with their hands. There's just something, again, like the humanity versus technology, that Star Wars energy is more machine than man now, you know, that stuff resonates so much. I love a Wheel of Time, like the notion of a tapestry and many threads coming together is, like, symbolically very powerful to me in terms of big world building and a greater universe, the connectivity of all of us to one another, even if we don't know one another, Corey. I love all this kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, and that tapestry, the fabric that Milan gave her, I remember he mentioned something about it being woven from, like, 140 different planets or something like that. I'm sure I got the number wrong, but something just very, you know, reflective of exactly what you just meant, and that symbology. This is, like, an ultimate fabric that's incredibly rare because it unifies these individual threads even more from even greater distances. And there is absolutely something to it, even if Milan himself didn't necessarily realize that there might have been more meaning to it.
Yeah, very fascinating. Any other stuff that you want to focus in on, or anything that we haven't talked about yet that you'd like to circle back and hit?
No, I think from my perspective, we've covered pretty much most of what I wanted to mention. And realistically, I think that this is just another great example. We've said before that this whole series is laid out in this sort of short story perspective. And this is the ultimate example of that, where we're just backing out of where we are and moving back. I do think we're probably never going to see Sophie again, but I could potentially see Aleph coming back in at some point in the future. So that's also something maybe to look out for.
I think you're very spot on there. I mean, again, I really was delighted to see Barbara Hershey in the role of Sophie. She's a pretty prominent actress, and it's awesome to see her show up in something like this. I thought she really carried some energy. She may turn up again, but I wouldn't be surprised if she does not. Aleph feels to me like a character that will return circa episode 7 or 8 for some kind of very important revelation that will tee us up for a season 2. Part of what's, like, really fascinating about the show is we know we got the season 2 coming, Corey. I think it's already been shot and they're in post-production. The strikes have created, like, these kind of weird dynamics about releases and all this kind of stuff, but we know that there's more to dig into here. And I couldn't echo your sentiments more than I thought that for, I guess, a bottle episode, we could call it, I mean, at least like an offshoot away from our main ensemble, this is a really compelling hour of TV. I found myself riveted by it, and even more excited to get back to the main story. Is that this is a just a great example of a way that you can deviate midway through your season to create more momentum leading back into the main story proper. So I'm psyched for episode 5.
Likewise. And I think that this is something that a lot of shows would, like, wait to do, or be like, well, maybe we can spin it off or something like that and add more backstory in some other property. But I love that they went here, and ultimately I love that ultimately in the end, we are going to get that season two. The book is so short. It's just such an interesting idea, but they have added so much to explore here. You know, Milan, Aleph, this character, head of the QTA. We still don't know that much about the QTA, although we know a lot more than we did before.
Sure, we do.
Episode. There's a lot of threads, speaking of tapestries, that still have not, we've not found the end of, and I'm really excited to get into it.
Well, we will be back next week weaving all of our threads together, talking Beacon 23, episode 5. But until then, Corey, where are you at? Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me at Cavx, C-A-V-X, on a variety of social media platforms, as well as, always like to say it, on our post-show recaps Patreon Discord, where you can find me and Rich as well. We're both hanging out in there. Feel free to come in, talk about this show or any other show that you happen to be watching. We're probably watching it with you.
Somebody in there, definitely. Patreon.com/postshowrecaps. The $10 a month level gets you access to the whole Discord, which is a booming, robust, and a very fun place with a lot of nonsense games, as well as a great number of conversations about television and books and movies and all of the nerdy pop culture stuff that we love over here. I'm at DM Philly in all the places. Go hit me up on Twitter. I'm on Twitch. I'm on YouTube. I'm on Discord. I'm talking about Yellowstone every week with Grace Leader, Grace and Ariel, and myself just finished breaking down Tales from the Loop a couple of weeks ago. If you're digging Beacon 23, Tales from the Loop might be a real fun gem of a show that you have not heard about or seen over on Amazon Prime, worth scoping out. We will be back in 1 week's time talking about Beacon 23 episode 5. But until then, just remember, if your AI is calling you mommy, that is an unhealthy relationship.